This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Of course, you know, with restaurant dining being closed, you can always get curbside pickup. You can do takeout. You can do delivery. Bernstein's is open and available to help you out. The grocery store is open, and, of course, the restaurant part is open, too. I saw that Ezzy enjoyed himself a nice Illegal Curve sandwich yesterday for lunch. How was that sandwich there, Mr. Ginsburg?
You know how good it was, Drew.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm just constantly reminded every time I have an Illegal Curve sandwich,
yeah.
I just think to myself, like, how did we create the world's best sandwich?
And we did.
I mean, it's just, I savor every bite. Comes with a pickle and some coleslaw. I happened to pick myself up a little Applejack as well, because you know, you guys know that I like my dessert. It was a nice little break in the workday, you know, to pick up an icy sandwich. And as you mentioned, you know, you can still take out, or if you prefer curbside, or order DoorDash. So, you know, support your local delis, as I like to say, Drew.
Yeah, you do support your local delis, and you know, do whatever you can. Do your part. Support all your local businesses right now. They are, of course, in desperate need, so do your part, and do like Ezzy and order an Illegal Curve sandwich. We actually had a comment coming in via text in the spirit of support local. One of our texters suggested that Bernstein's should have a partnership with Ezzy, where Ezzy for a day delivers everyone's Illegal Curve sandwiches. That came in via text.
Did Ezzy text you though?
Yeah. Ezzy did not text us that.
No, that was the thing, Drew. That text actually came from me. So I'm going to be eating all the sandwiches.
I don't know what it is, but I responded to the texter and said the only problem with that strategy is of course, he would eat all the sandwiches.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, so there'd be a lot of disappointed customers, but we do suggest, you know, supporting your local delis and supporting your local restaurants.
I would say though, I know we're working to get Joe on, but we'll, just going back to the Jets prospects, it was not a banner week for the prospect goaltenders though.
Oh, something happened with Burden.
Mikael Burden let in a goal. I've got a link to it on the
page.
Yeah,
it was an ugly one.
It was an ugly one. He got pulled after the first period. I think he had given up a few goals and his others, SK Ska came back and ended up winning that game. And then Arvid Holm also got pulled this week. He gave up 4 goals in the Swedish league. So it was not a banner week. But yeah, Burden's goal was bad because it was behind the opposition's blue line. The guy shot it. I mean, really not. I mean, it was just such a terrible bounce from, you know, it's one of those Tommy Salo like goals. Like you just like, you feel bad for the guy because you can just see the way the puck hits. You can see he's prepared for the puck to go one way.
Yeah.
And then it just hits the ice and then careens right into the back of the net. And I was like, and usually we think of Burden as a guy who's, you know, shooting at the opposition's net and potentially scoring, but not often do you see it happen to him. So that was a bad look for Mikael Burden. Wasn't a great week for either of the Jets' goaltending prospects out in overseas this week.
Another comment coming in via Twitter, Mr. Diction, in response to our Andrew Kopp segment where we were talking about his long-term future here in Winnipeg, Mr. Diction says, Kurt Overhart.
That's a great nickname.
Who is Andrew Kopp's agent. The writing is on the wall. He wants out. Tipoff was going to arbitration when he went to arbitration last year.
Well, so, I don't know about that. The problem is, like, again, players are entitled to have a feel as to what their value is, and if you don't, aren't able to come to terms, then arbitration is something that is negotiated into your contract.
What?
So, I mean, you know, you're allowed to use whatever means possible. Teams do it. Players can do it. I don't know that I agree in the sense that necessarily means the writing is on the wall. It just means that the team didn't want to pay him X and he wanted Y and they had to come to a negotiation.
I don't think that, you know, Kurt Overhart certainly has his reputation and that is being aggressive and that is certainly being a strong advocate for the players that he represents. Mm-hmm. As far as I know, he's never done an Alan Walsh where the goaltender is carrying a sword with the coach's name on it. But
this one would be like Cop and Robber or something like that.
That's clever there, Dave.
Wrong cop, bad cop.
That's clever too. Also there, Mr. Ginsburg. But you know, players are entitled to pick the representative that they think is best for them. Kurt Overhart is a strong advocate for his players, and frankly, and we'll talk about this, you know, a little bit later on in the show, the players need strong advocates, because as you can see with the owners currently trying to rip up a CBA or adjust the terms of a CBA that's 3 months old, players need strong advocates on their side.
I don't disagree. I mean, again, though, the only thing you have to be cautious of is look at the market. I mean, we've talked about it. We talked about it last week or the week before. I mean, the reality is the NHL is not the NBA. And the money is, I mean, again, some of these teams are better off not playing than paying out these huge salaries and receiving virtually no money. So, again, it's one of those situations.
But that
where,
has nothing to do with an agent necessarily.
No. But you're talking about players needing strong advocacy. I'm just saying that you're intimating that because of the way the NHL is trying to renegotiate a CBA, they just negotiated.
Right.
I'm simply suggesting that, you know, it would be more of a temporary adjustment based on the current circumstances.
Fine. I'll grant you that given the current circumstances that it can be an adjustment. But, I mean, look, Andrew Copp, I don't know what his future here is in Winnipeg. I mean, I think that there's certainly a role for players like Andrew Copp on every team in the NHL. We see it time and time again. You know, the contract Brandon Tanev signed with the Pittsburgh Penguins, which is, a bit of a ridiculous contract, but it shows that for a guy who has a specific role and who can play a specific role, they're going to get paid. And they're going to get a long-term contract.
And they're going to get overpaid.
And they're going to get overpaid in the case of Brandon Tanev.
But that's why, to Ezzie's point, when you have players like Jansen Harkins and Mason Appleton who can potentially come in and fill these roles, do you need to overpay for them?
Well, you don't need to overpay for them.
Especially when you have guys like Patrick Laine who are going to require a significant portion of your money. So the point is, this is where you find that extra money for a guy like Laine is by not overpaying the Lowrys and the Copps. If you have guys that you feel like a Gustafson, a Harkins. Harkins is making, what, $777 next year?
$725.
So, I mean, that's my whole point, is you have cost certainty for... It's like when Tucker Pullman signed his deal. Remember when Tucker Pullman signed that deal, and we're all like, that was a three-year deal he signed.
Yeah, it was a three-year deal at $775.
$775. But that was an unbelievable deal for the Jets. I couldn't believe it, because remember, I was like, I thought he was only going to sign like maybe another one-year deal, and he ended up signing that three-year deal at a very reasonable rate. So, my point is that you need the affordability in certain contracts because you're going to have to pay your high-end guys.
You know, we shouldn't, you know, we're not obviously spreading a rumor and saying that Andrew Copp's days in Winnipeg are done. I think it's important to remember that he's still going to be an RFA, and I think you also have to, as I mentioned a couple of segments ago, or last segment, that, you know, you have to factor in the expansion draft because the Jets are going to have to decide between Andrew Copp, Adam Lowry, or Jansen Harkins, really.
Two of those three, generally, are guys they're going to have to hold on
to. And Adam Lowry...
Well, depending on what happens with Jack Roslovic, of course.
Yeah, exactly, but... You're right, Drew. We should consider Roslovic as well, assuming that he signs a deal with the Jets and stays with the Jets. But, you know, you're going to also have to factor in, like, if you look at it and you say, you know, you could have Jansen Harkins at $725,000 versus Andrew Copp at, you know, $3.5 million a year for 4 or 5 years, you know, maybe the Jets do decide, you know, to move on from Andrew Copp. But I think because he has 1 year left on his deal, you don't necessarily have to think about that right now. Like Drew mentioned, you could sign Copp to an extension now, and I mentioned this. If you're asking me, should the Jets keep Copp? Absolutely. Is there a future? Of course there could be, because he's been such a valuable player for so long. But to Drew's point, at the end of the day, it's about economics. If you're going to pay Laine around $9 million a year, $9.5 million a year, you've got Neil Pionk, who's probably going to make, what, $4 to $5 million a year? I have no idea. He's definitely going to make more than he's making now, right? So it's all about money, and, you know, maybe there's not going to be enough money to go around. Maybe they find money for Copp and they move somebody else out. Matty Perreault's deal is going to be up, for example. So we'll see.
When we come back, we'll look at some of the remaining RFAs throughout the NHL, what we think they're going to sign for, and when. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
35 seconds left in the second period. Sanheim flushed out by Brassard. A turnover. Barzell's on it. He'll dart. Tap Barzell. Scores! What a goal!
Matt Barzell scoring in the playoffs against the Philadelphia Flyers. He's, of course, right at the top of the list of pending RFAs or current RFAs still waiting on contracts. We'll talk about that this segment, but first, let's check out the Odd Shark Inbox presented by Odd Shark, your source for the latest odds from leading authorities. Find your edge at oddshark.net. We want to hear from you. You can send us your comments at Illegal Curve. You can send us your comments via text. Send your text to 129090. Whatever's on your mind. We were asking you, of course, about which player playing overseas, which just Jets forward prospect playing overseas you think is going to make the team this coming season. You can let us know the answer to that. We have a question that comes in via text from Chef Richard. He wants to know about Logan Stanley. Can we call him a bust yet? The price for him was ridiculous. First and second round pick. Is Chevy's drafting as good as we think? Patrick Laine and Cole Perfetti were no-brainers. Dave, you watch Logan Stanley more than anyone else. Certainly the development curve has not been what the Jets would have hoped for when they drafted him in the first round. Can you use the B word for bust for Logan Stanley?
I mean, you can if you want. I generally don't because, again, he's 22 years old. He's played two pro seasons, one of which was... You know, he had some injuries to deal with. So, I mean, that's something that cost him some time last season. So, I mean, again, people are so... We live in an instant gratification society, unfortunately. And as a result, if a player doesn't follow the standard trajectory, then they're labeled a bust. I mean, and we've talked about it. Is Logan Stanley going to be a first-pairing defenseman in the NHL? I don't anticipate that. Could Logan Stanley... Eventually, if he works on his game, I mean, again, I'm not his agent. I don't work for Logan Stanley. I'm not a cheerleader for him. But again, it's like anything. You know, it's like Christian Vesalainen. Mm-hmm. Any of these guys have the tools to make it in the NHL. It's about refining your game and taking those elements that have allowed you to get to where you are and getting them to the next level because you want to play in the best league possible. So could Logan Stanley, you know, be a third pairing defenseman or potentially a second pairing defenseman for the Winnipeg Jets? It's possible. I'm not saying it's not. But, I mean, look, he's got to work on some things on his game. So he'll work on his game in the American Hockey League with the Manitoba Moose. And if he's able to take that next step and he's worked on it this summer, then, you know, it's entirely possible that Logan Stanley isn't going to be a bust as people have labeled him. But, yeah, he's an easy one because the Jets traded up to grab him. And
right.
So as a result, you know, people tend to focus on that. And also the reality is, you know, he's in that Patrick Laine draft. He's you know, Patrick Laine did what he did.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like I said, defensemen take longer. Look, I can't tell you how many people told me Josh Morrissey was a bust. And I was like, I was watching him in the AHL. And I was thinking to myself, this guy's not a bust. He's a really good defenseman. But like, again, because he's playing in the American Hockey League, it was as if he hadn't accomplished anything. And I was like, guys, it's a defenseman. We know they traditionally take longer to get to the NHL. That's just a fact. So again, I'm not one to throw it out casually and to drop it easily. Now, again, it also depends on your expectations. Like I said, mine are, you know, potentially a third-pairing guy.
Mm-hmm.
And is that so bad if you have a big third-pairing guy for the next 10 years who you can rely on? I don't think so.
And Logan Stanley can't, like, I mean, he was selected by the Jets in the first round, right? Like, if you're judging it based on, you know, he's still not an NHL regular, then yeah, he's a bust. But doesn't mean that he can't have a good pro career ahead of him because, as Dave mentioned, you know, he's in his early 20s, right? So, I mean, it's almost like we shouldn't have boom or bust, right? Like, this whole notion of bust, like, not every single guy that's drafted, actually, the majority, I mean, and Dave and I know this, we've covered the drafts going back to 2011, the majority of guys don't have full NHL careers, right?
That's right.
So the reality is most guys are busts. Not just first-rounders or second-rounders, like all players that are drafted.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only, what, 750, 800 guys in the NHL, right? So, like, these guys go on to have careers either, you know, in North America in the AHL or they go overseas, you know, like a guy like Jacob McFlicker. Mm-hmm. Are you going to tell Jacob McFlicker he's a bust? He's one of the best hockey players to ever come out of Winnipeg, right? So he's obviously not a bust. So, you know, there's still a lot of time for him.
We thank Chef Richard for his text, Facebook and Instagram posts, your texts, your tweets. We find them in the Odd Shark inbox. And remember, oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Find your edge at oddshark.net. looking back at the RFAs that are still pending in the NHL, we know here in Winnipeg, of course, Jack Roslovic is still an RFA for the Winnipeg Jets. He would not be at the top of the biggest names on that list. You got to start with guys like Matthew Barzal of the New York Islanders, Pierre-Luc Dubois of the Columbus Blue Jackets, Anthony Cirelli of the Tampa Bay Lightning. These are the guys you mentioned. Mikhail Sergachev, certainly on the back end. He's the best defenseman that would be still an RFA. So there's still a lot of big names out there that are going to need some sort of resolution between now and the start of the regular season. And a lot of these teams, particularly the Islanders and particularly the Lightning, and we'll talk about this in the third hour of today's show, don't have enough money to fit Barzal and Cirelli under contract. So there's a lot of, it's definitely the quiet time right now, but you got to figure that quiet time is only going to last really right up until they finally come to an agreement on when the season's going to restart and what it's going to look like. And then they're going to have to hit the ground running, and it's going to be a sprint like we haven't seen really, in terms of a regular season sprint in a long, long time.
Yeah, I mean, and if you think about it, this is going to be very similar to the lockout season, right? And the lockout season, I think, started like January 17th, 2013, around there. It was right around the last third of January. So it was in that time, and we saw what it was like. And that's kind of why you don't really want to have the uncertainty. You don't want to have a training camp, which is going to be the most unusual training camp anyways, and not have these guys signed. It's a little different than when you didn't have Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor in the training camp right away because you were still working on trying to get those deals done.
Right.
You know, Tampa Bay, do you really want to have those guys not signed to deals when you're trying to defend your Stanley Cup?
Well, Tampa Bay needs to figure it out because they're going to have to ship players out
for the cap.
I mean, there's no question that, with Laine and Connor and even Morrissey, when he not held out, but he wasn't under contract for the first couple days of that training camp, there was no question they were going to be members of the Winnipeg Jets sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
And it's not like other players had to leave so that they could fit in.
Right.
The Lightning and the Islanders, I mean, gosh, these teams, there's so much uncertainty about who's going to be leaving that it's not just the RFA themselves who are impacted. It's really the entire organization and the entire current roster.
Yeah, and, the key word is uncertainty. Not only is there tons of uncertainty in hockey, guys, just in life in general, right?
Sure.
Like, we don't know where this coronavirus is going. We hope that it's going to get better, in the next month or so, but it might be a few months, and you have to think. And the other thing is another guy that I was going to mention, maybe not at the same level, Mackenzie Blackwood, who's coming off of a really good deal with the Devils. He needs a new deal. He's also unsigned. And, we talked about Sergachev, some other players too, to a lesser extent, but, the big ones, I mean, Matt Barzal, I mean, you're probably talking about what, $6-7 million minimum per year for a guy like Matt Barzal, right, guys? So you're talking about some big-name guys. Same thing for Pierre-Luc Dubois. Like, this is the Blue Jackets' number one center and has been for a couple of years. So Dubois is going to get a lot of money. So I think that's important to note, that it's players that are going to affect a salary cap quite a bit. Like, you saw Dallas, I thought, was interesting. They re-signed Denis Gurianov and Rupe Hintz, but those guys are coming off of basically their first real big NHL year, right? Even though they're kind of similar age, they got those deals done. They were around a couple of million dollars a year. So it's a waiting game right now. And, we talked to Charlie Rimiliotis about it last hour with Dylan Strome. Dylan Strome's going to make a little bit more money than, a guy like Jack Roslovic will, but you're talking about a second-line center, right? So Dylan Strome's a guy that I imagine he's probably going to be around $4 million a year. And when you're a team that's right up against the cap, and the Hawks are one of those teams, the Jets are definitely one of those teams, but I still go back to Tampa Bay, and that is the most interesting one to me, because Anthony Cirelli and Mikhail Sergachev played a very significant role in the Lightning winning the Stanley Cup. I think it's going to be very tough to keep both of those guys. Like, we know that Tyler Johnson was basically offered for free.
Yeah,
like,
well,
the Lightning said, here, anybody wants him, you can have him. And we thought, a team like Detroit or Ottawa might take him, but, Cirelli and Sergachev, a little bit more difficult to predict how much they're going to make, because we don't know, is it going to be a shorter-term deal or a longer-term deal? But, we mentioned all these players, and these are really good players. Like, these are first-round picks. These are, when you're talking about Dubois and Strome, these are third overall picks.
Do you think there's any chance, for an offer sheet for any of these guys at this point? Or is that ship sailed because it's so late in the offseason?
And, you know, I'll let Dave get in here, but, like, you think it would have happened already. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's been some talk that, you know, GMs are not doing it because of, you know, what's going on with the uncertainty of not only when the NHL season is going to start, but, sure. you know, the salary cap, we expect it to be pretty flat for the next couple of years, right? Around 81 mil. So there's kind of this talk that, you know, some GMs could do it, but they're kind of, you know, almost giving Julien Brisebois a bit of a pass. But
isn't this the time to do it? Because
if you're not doing it now, you're not doing it.
Well, because of, first of all, yeah, the financial implications, but also remember, every player, they're getting a portion of their salary this year. They're not getting the full value. Right. So if you sign a guy, you know, if you get offer sheet a guy and it's, you know, I'm throwing numbers out there, $10 million that you would have to pay him.
Yeah.
Well, on paper, in actuality, because of the deferral of the money and because of the escrow, you're not actually having to outlay that $10 million for a guy. So, I mean, there's so many interesting dynamics at play here, but if you wanted to be aggressive, and we talked about this, I mean, gosh, we talked about this months ago at this point in time, that, you know, this might be the time to be aggressive against a team that may have to think long and hard about where their revenue sources are coming in from.
For sure. And we saw, like, Columbus talked about that specifically, and Jarmo Kekalainen said how they insulated themselves against someone trying to come along and offer sheet Pierre-Luc Dubois. So they have the space to match pretty much any sort of offer that's coming in.
Right.
But as you've talked about, Drew, is Tampa really in that same situation? Doesn't appear to be that way unless they're able to, you know, shed some more salary and don't want to lose these guys. But again, to me, you know, Tampa seems ripe for it.
Yep.
And so you would think that if you're an aggressive GM, but we've seen that these GMs generally don't want to rock the boat. So, I mean, how many...
And a lot of these GMs, sorry, Dave, don't have necessarily the money.
Or the
right?
picks.
So it almost goes both ways. Like, there were some talk, you know, that a team like the Jets might, before they acquired Stastny, right?
Right.
Like Cirelli, like Scotty Billick, mm-hmm. our good buddy, you know, brought that up. And you know, Cirelli could be my second line center any day of the week, right? Mm-hmm. But I think you agree, like, if you were going to be aggressive, you would have done it closer to like early October when free agency started.
Yeah.
Right? Now it's kind of this quiet period. And who knows? We might see it. We only usually see, like, it seems like we see an offer sheet once every 3 years.
In October, right? I think you don't do it because in October, I think it was more maybe, you know, the case counts weren't as high as they are now. And maybe people, an ownership group may have thought, oh, it'll be okay. We'll match that because we'll be able to have fans in the building.
Right.
Now, where it's looking less and less likely that you're going to have fans for, well, the vast majority of the 2021 season, and thus another revenue source is being cut off,
right.
maybe now is the time to do it.
And you know, continuing in that same vein, what did Tampa just do? They just eliminated 30 positions.
So this is a team
it's just a financial reality in all aspects of life, in whether it's your home life or whether it's your business life. People are cutting costs. So, I mean, you know, again, you know, to your point, Drew, if you're a team that has the space, has the need, has the picks available.
Well, and that's the big thing, Dave. You just mentioned those are three things. Those are three separate things. You have to have the cap space. You have to have the position. Like, if you went up and down, first off, I think there's like 10 or 11 teams in the league right now that have zero cap space.
Yeah, there's
right?
not
like
a lot.
The Jets are one of them, right?
Yeah. Because
they've got Roslovic to sign. So, I mean, like a third of the league doesn't even have the cap space. Like, you'd have to move someone out, or maybe there's long-term injury reserve, you know, like the Jets are going to have with Brian Little. But, like, it's just, it just seems like, you know, Dave mentioned ripe, and I don't think the environment right now in the NHL is ripe for a team to make an offer sheet, especially, you know, for a top-end guy like a Pierre-Luc Dubois or a Matt Barzal. Like, these are excellent player, like Barzal and Dubois, like these are first line guys. Like these are guys that are going to get, you know, 75 to 90 points a year for the next 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll see. But, you know, it certainly seemed, you know, a couple of months ago, like a team could definitely take advantage of Tampa Bay and pluck Cirelli out or pluck Sergachev out. But
time
so far,
tell.
Hasn't happened.
When we come back, we talk about the NHL asking the NHLPA to increase the deferment of salary and the NHLPA's response to that. Return to play conversation up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number 3 up to come on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Minuke. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here via text message. Send your text to 129090. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. That's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From BostonHockeyNow.com, he covers the Boston Bruins. We're pleased to welcome to the program Joe Haggerty. Joe, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good morning, and it's good to hear you guys have got some snow on the ground there in Winnipeg. That always feels right to me.
That does it. It certainly feels more like hockey season when there's snow on the ground. Now we just need the NHL to cooperate and figure out a way to get back playing the game, and we'll all be back to normal. Joe, obviously,
Absolutely.
Brought you on to talk about the Bruins. Yeah, to talk about the Bruins and talk about their off season. And of course, you can't talk about the Bruins off season without talking about the injuries, the significant injuries to both David Pastrnak and Brad Marchand. You know, when this season gets underway, and let's for argument's sake say it gets underway, you know, a week or two into January, if not January 1st, best case scenario, how quickly can the Bruins get Marchand and Pastrnak back into their lineup?
I think, and I'm with you, I think the soonest we would see hockey is maybe mid-January rather than January 1. And I actually had a source say to me over the last few days that part of it from the player's side is that the players don't want to have training camp around Christmas and the holidays, given all the time they gave up with their families for weeks and months at a time in the bubble over the summer and fall during the playoffs, that it's going to be a hard sell for them to give up being around their family at Christmas, you know, to be in training camp and to kind of be slogging and working during the holidays. But so that being said, I think it's going to be mid-January at the earliest. And if that's the case, I think that Brad Marchand, he may not miss any time at all. His timetable's right around then. Typically, given his work ethic, given how hard he rehabs from injuries, he's a pretty quick healer. I do think he could probably be back by that point. You don't miss any time at all with him coming back from a sports hernia. By all accounts, he's ahead of schedule and doing really well. With Pastrnak, I think he's going to miss time. And, you know, if they start in mid-January, it could be a month. And you start in February, now you're talking maybe a few weeks. And with him, even when he does come back, and I remember this with David Krejci when he had a pretty significant hip surgery, that it took him a while to get that extra gear he had skating-wise to come back. And that's something the Pastrnak relies on quite a bit, is that extra gear he has and that burst he has skating. So, you know, even when he does come back, I think he could be impacted by it for a bit when he's playing again. So, you know, I think it's interesting scenario, them potentially missing time, certainly with Pastrnak missing time. I think when you already have subtracted Torrey Krug from the equation, with him signing with the St. Louis Blues, you could see some real offensive struggles out of the gate for the Bruins in those first few weeks, first month of the regular season. And I think given their young defenseman core that they're kind of going towards, it could be a slow start for the Bruins because of those injuries. But I don't think either player is expected to miss significant time given they had the surgeries all the way back in September.
You know, Joe, the Bruins were obviously not, you know, one of the more busy teams in the offseason, but one of the moves on our show that we thought went under the radar, a player that, you know, we have a lot of familiarity with here in the Central Division, obviously I'm talking about Craig Smith, and the Bruins signed him to that three-year deal, you know, just over $3 million a year. And this is a guy that, you know, whether he plays on the second or third line, this is a good veteran winger, you know, who can give you, you know, 20-plus goals, you know, around 40 points, and he can mix it up. And does this not just seem like the perfect fit for the Bruins?
Yeah, I think it was one of the best signings in this entire offseason. And in a weird offseason where there's been a lot of bargains, there's still a lot of guys out there that haven't been signed yet. You know, it's been unlike any offseason we've seen before, given the circumstances of COVID-19 and, you know, the flat salary caps we're looking at for, you know, the foreseeable future. I think he was one of the best bargains out there. And he's a great signing by Don Sweeney. And Sweeney is very good at signing his own players. That's kind of his wheelhouse, is getting established Bruins players to sign team-friendly deals and to sort of keep the salary cap picture in mind. He's had a very checkered history when it comes to signing outside free agents. And it seems like the bigger money that he goes, the worse the deals become. But, you know, there's been some hits and some big misses as far as free agency goes for Don Sweeney. And I think this is one that's going to be a great signing and is going to address needs that the Bruins have. You know, very good 5-on-5 scorer, Craig Smith, very good two-way player. Certainly, I think, will give them scoring punch in their third line, which is something they have not had against teams like Tampa Bay, who they've lost to in two of the last three postseasons because they've just overwhelmed them with their forward depth, and I think it's going to help them. Charlie Coyle and Craig Smith could be a very nice combination for the Bruins next season and then moving forward. So I really like the signing. I think that in itself was a great move that the Bruins made. When you pull back and look at their entire offseason, though, I give Don Sweeney, I'd say a C at best right now. Could go up to a B depending on what's left to do. Could go down to a D in my estimation if he doesn't do anything else. Because right now all he's done is signed Craig Smith and signed Kevin Miller, who hasn't played in 18 months, to a one-year deal. Jake DeBrusk is still unsigned. Zdeno Chara, we're still not sure what's going to happen with him at this point. It seems like he's going to come back, but who knows until he actually signs the contract. And they lost Torrey Krug, and they have not replaced that offensive scoring punch. That's a guy that averaged 10 goals and 50 points on the back end, was their best, by far, offensive defenseman. And I just don't think guys like Matt Grizzlick and Charlie McAvoy are going to be able to replace that kind of offense that he left. And that's kind of a gaping hole that the Bruins are going to have to address. They obviously were interested in Oliver Ekman-Larsson. That didn't happen last month when he put that deadline at the start of free agency. And it was interesting. I wrote about this morning. Interesting comments that Oliver Ekman-Larsson made to Craig Morgan out in Arizona, one of the media guys out there. It didn't completely shut the door on when the season opens up, him, you know, revisiting the trade talks if Arizona decides they really need to move him again. And I think that's a player that they would still be interested in. I could see a scenario where the Bruins start the regular season with a young defenseman core, realize they're not going to be able to replace Torrey Krug's offense with what they have, and maybe they revisit an Oliver Ekman-Larsson deal during the season, because it's clear he's interested in coming to Boston as one of the two teams he put as options to be traded to. So I'd keep an eye on that one once the season starts.
Joe Haggerty is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joe covers the Boston Bruins with bostonhockeynow.com. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
You know, Joe, one of the things we talked about last hour with respect to the Jets prospects and a number of them that are playing overseas and the advantage they're going to have whenever this regular season gets underway because they'll have been playing pro hockey. Are there any Boston players that are taking advantage that you anticipate can use this to kind of jump into the NHL that maybe weren't necessarily on the radar before this?
I mean, the only one that I've really seen that's popped up is Jacob Lauko. He's pretty young, though. I don't know that he's going to be a factor with the Bruins this season. I still think he was extreme. He was like a 19-year-old, I think, last year in the AHL, one of the youngest guys in the league. Definitely has some skill and talent and some grit. Was a former third-round pick, and I think will be in the NHL within the next couple of years. And he's been playing pretty well overseas right now. So, you know, he may have a leg up at the start of training camp when he comes over. And, you know, the other player that people have been keeping an eye on around here is playing in the U.S. college first-round pick, Johnny Beecher, who's, you know, obviously not going to be pro this coming year either. He's playing at the University of Michigan. But there are not a ton of Bruins that are overseas playing in Europe right now. And I think for them, it's going to be a slow build-up, you know, to the season starting. And I don't think that's an area where they're going to have an advantage. And like I said to you before, I think given the turnover that they have on the back end, given the young defensemen that they have that they're going to be throwing out there, given the injuries to Brad Marchand and David Pastrnak, given the general age of this Bruins team, the core is getting older, and the Bruins know this, and I think they're at the very close to the end of the window of their cup chances with the aging group that they have, with guys like Tuukka Rask and David Krejci in the last years of their contract. You know, this could be a real slow start for the Bruins, and this could be a step back for them this year, given that the lack of moves besides Craig Smith that they've made in this offseason. That's going to be something to watch. So I'd go in the other direction. I don't think they're going to have a lot of players that are going to have head starts going into this year. I think it could be a very slow start for the Boston Bruins, given what they've been the last couple of years. President's Trophy winner last year, and you know, got to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final the year before.
Joe Haggerty's our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Boston Bruins. Joe, we know that Tuukka Rask, he left the bubble to deal with a family issue, and certainly none of us in this room would criticize him for that. Family comes first. He's exactly, under contract this year, and then he's a UFA after that. You know, what happens with Tuukka Rask at this stage in his career? I mean, obviously he's the backbone of the Bruins goaltending tandem with Halak, but what does the future hold for Tuukka Rask?
No, it's a great question, and it's unknown. I 100% agree with you guys. You know, I was not given an option to go up there. I was still working for NBC Sports at the time to go up and cover the playoffs. Nobody was traveling for us, but I was not going either way. You know, I've got young kids. That was not going to be an option for me. So I definitely understand, especially if there's an issue at home, you know, leaving to be with your family and to deal with that situation. So I think, you know, from that perspective, that he's got the support of his teammates in the organization. The issue becomes that this is the second time in 2 years that Tuukka Rask has had to leave the team to deal with family issues, personal issues, off-ice issues. Second time in 2 years he's had difficulty balancing the personal and the professional. And, you know, regardless of the reasoning behind it, when you're paying a goalie like Tuukka that kind of money and you're relying on him, I think that's something you have to talk about as an organization. All that being said, you know, and the determination at the end of the day was that they're far better with Tuukka Rask than without him, and that he's going to be their number one goalie this coming season. I don't know what the future is going to hold for him after that. You know, Tuukka has talked many times, you know, more than once or twice, about potentially retiring sooner rather than later. He's got a lot of other interests besides hockey. I'm not sure that hockey is number one for him as far as, like, you know, what he loves to do. Certainly, I think his family is hugely important to him, and I think he's a guy that could end up retiring sooner rather than later before anybody expects, especially when you consider he's already made over $50 million in his career. You know, that's the kind of guy that, even though goalies can play well into their 30s, late 30s, and still be really effective, that for him, it might be a retirement might be an attractive thing sooner rather than later. And I don't know that winning a cup is the thing that's going to keep him hanging around. He's just not that kind of guy. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they do after this season. There is really no heir apparent right now. You know, the young guys have to have more seasoning. Daniel Vladar, Jeremy Swayman, they're not ready to take over. We'll see what happens after this year, but I don't anticipate them getting a lot of NHL time because Halak and Rask are your two goalies at the NHL level. So there still probably will be a lot of questions if either one of them is a number one NHL defenseman after this year. So they're going to be a tough spot as far as deciding what to do. They may be in a position where they need to re-sign Tuukka and, you know, show him the money just because they have no other viable replacement as a number one goalie. But a lot's going to depend on what happens this year. If he goes incident-free this year, has a great season, they go deep in the playoffs, you know, maybe it's a different story. But based on everything that's happened the last couple of years, I think a lot is going to be told about what happens this year between Tuukka Rask and the Boston Bruins.
Joe, one final question for you here. A couple of days ago, Greg Wyshynski of ESPN reported on the potential divisions for the upcoming season, and I'm sure that you've seen it by now, and you know, Toronto and Tampa Bay are now not in the Bruins division, but you've got, you know, some pretty good teams in there: Washington Capitals, New York Islanders, Carolina Hurricanes, and you know, a few up-and-coming teams like the Rangers, Devils, and Sabres. What did you think of that divisional realignment? And, you know, going back to our question earlier about, you know, the Bruins losing Torrey Krug and not making too many moves, how do you think the Bruins would fare in that new Eastern division?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, from a fan perspective, fans are going to be bummed out that they're not going to be able to watch Bruins Habs. You know, you didn't even mention Montreal. That's the big rivalry here. It's going to be weird if that's not a regular season matchup that we see very often during the regular season. Obviously, there have been budding rivalries for the last couple of years with teams like Tampa Bay and with Toronto. So that's going to be strange, too. And, you know, the one interesting thing is that it'll be more of a focus on the Boston-New York rivalry with the Rangers, the Islanders, the Devils, the Sabres. Like, there's something there to glom onto. Obviously, it would be a really good division. The Bruins do not like to see the Washington Capitals in their division. That's a team that they've, you know, been owned by for the last 10 years. So that's something to watch out for as well. But it just speaks to, you know, what we're all going through, right? That we now know, just looking through the All-Canadian division, potential realignment, you know, another season that's less than 82 games, no matter what happens this season, no matter what we see on the ice, it's once again going to be very strange, just like the bubble playoffs were. And, you know, we're probably at the end of the day just going to have to be happy that hockey is back in some form or fashion.
Joe Haggerty covers the Boston Bruins for BostonHockeyNow.com. Joe, always appreciate your time, appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
You got it. My pleasure, guys, and stay warm in the peg.
Likewise, Joe, stay safe there in Boston. Take care. When we come back, we'll discuss the NHL and the NHLPA. Round and round they go. Where the negotiations stop, nobody knows. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Boy, it's causing a big issue right now. There's no question about that. You know, there's lots of talk among players, certainly among the 31 executive members of the National Hockey League Players Association, players, that is, they, I'm sure, feel to some degree that this is unfair. I mean, what has been a surprise in this pandemic? They negotiated a CBA extension in the pandemic.
Darren Dreger appearing on TSN 1050 Overdrive talking about the NHL ask of the NHLPA to increase the deferment of salary for the upcoming season. Dreger getting a little heated there, which I like. He's being passionate about how, from my perspective, and I think a lot of people's perspective, certainly players' perspective, this is a ridiculous and unfair ask. What has changed between July, when the contract and the CBA was agreed to, and now? I mean, in July, was there any thought that, you know, the arenas were going to be able to be full and that revenue stream was going to be at full blast? Not in my mind. So for the NHL to go out and ask this of the NHLPA, it's disingenuous at best, I believe.
I would suggest that if you knew, if you had gone in eyes wide open and you said that it's a very real possibility that the buildings would not be full, and then you make the ask, then it's ridiculous.
Right.
I think that if you left yourself a little bit of latitude and you said, listen, we're going to go in, this is going to be the negotiation. However, having said that, we are going to leave ourselves that ability to wiggle out and say, listen, if we don't have fans in the building, we're not the NBA, we're not the NFL, we don't have the TV contracts to support no fans. Mm-hmm. So everybody's going to have to shave it down. And if that's the case, again, and I think that's, it's always interesting when we have these discussions, because I think there's always these missing elements. So it's very hard to have a fulsome debate about a subject when you don't know the full extent of the information.
Well, both sides went to the table in July with their worst case scenarios, because that's what you have to negotiate off. You can't.
I would agree with you, Drew. I think it's unreasonable to expect that you would say it's all going to be pie in the sky rosy. I mean, these aren't dumb guys putting together these contracts. You know, that the lawyers, when they're looking at this, they're not, and you know, it's not like one guy sits in a room and says, negotiates with another guy. You've got teams of lawyers, you use economists, you use projections, you have to, you know, you have to anticipate everything. You have to.
Well, that's, sorry to cut you off, Dave, but that's why it's hard for me to believe that back in July, that owners didn't think ahead to, you know, January 2021, February 2021, and think there's probably a good chance that we aren't going to be able to have fans in the stands. Because if you remember back in July, the coronavirus was really bad in the U.S. Like, it was better in certain provinces in Canada, but it's not like
both hub cities. I mean, the hub city was going to be Vegas before it was going to be Edmonton.
And it's only gotten worse in Canada and the U.S. So
you
wonder why, you know, and again, I agree with Dave. Like, it's not like one or two lawyers are involved here. There are dozens probably of lawyers involved. And yeah, there's probably people that are much smarter than me, which is not hard to be, but there's people that are projecting, you know, economists and business people, you know, league executives. Like, yeah, the NHL is going to lose a lot of money. They've already lost a lot of money, but I'm with Drew here. Like, you've asked the players to defer 10% of their salary. The escrow was capped at 20%. And, you know, for those, you know, who aren't really into this, escrow is basically a way to just even out the money because the owners...
It takes 20% of the player's salary and puts it into a separate pot that the players would get back if the revenues aren't at 50-50.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's all escrow is.
But basically, you're taking a paycheck from a player,
right.
But with a 10% deferral
right.
and a 20% escrow, you're taking 30% of their paycheck and saying,
right.
you're not getting this, right. this season.
But they will get it. It's just the complicated part is like they don't know when they're getting it.
Right.
Like they don't know if they're getting it next year or 4 years from now. So it's tough, if you're a guy that's making less money, right? Like it doesn't hurt. Like it hurts the guys that make more money in terms
sure.
of it. It's a larger percent that they lose. But if you're a guy that's making, you know, $800,000, $900,000, you know, especially if
my heart is bleeding.
But it's true. Like I agree with Dave. Now you're Drew, and you're asking guys now to defer more money, even though that's what you agreed to.
Look, they get
5 months ago.
They get paid.
Right?
Yeah, that's the part that's bothersome. Is they get paid, you know, the exorbitant salaries. So
uh-huh.
I don't have sympathy for their exorbitant salaries.
I think the owners are nickel and diming
the
players.
But that's
right
the owners always do.
Yeah.
It's the lack of the negotiating and bad faith that bothers me. Where you made an agreement 4 months ago,
yeah.
and now you're going back on your agreement just because nothing has changed?
Well, I think what becomes incumbent on the owners is to open up everything and say to the players, this is the reason we're asking. I mean, again, if you can't in good faith show there's a reason why you're asking this ask,
sure.
then the players have the full right to say, well, forget it, absolutely, I'm not doing that. I'm simply suggesting that, again, it's all well and good to talk about these numbers as if they mean nothing. But the difference is it's literally tens of millions of dollars. And look, guys, it's business. Like at the end of the day, if your business doesn't make money and you have one entity and you have to fund it personally, like it's not feasible in a lot of instances, right?
Well, so, and then it'll come down to probably, you know, that there's going to be some middle ground here, Dave. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, instead of, you know, 26% escrow, it's going to be, you know, 23%, whatever it is. But going back to what Drew said earlier, there's an agreement in place. And obviously the economic picture for the NHL looks worse than it did back in July. And part
but
of that.
Why did it?
Well,
that's the problem. I don't think it did. I think the owners made an agreement in July and said in their back pocket, you know what? We'll go back to them in November and we'll ask for some more concessions because we don't feel that, because the PA always rolls over to us more often than not.
And even though I hate to agree with Alan Walsh, I agree with him in the sense that if this was, you know, vice versa,
no chance.
The players would never win this argument.
And that's sort of the problem that the NHLPA has is that the owners know the players union isn't strong enough to stand up and say, no, the Players Association knows that they're going to probably at some point in time have to tweak the numbers just a little bit and give some more concessions back to the owners, and the owners know that as well.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of the situation, and I think it speaks to the impotence to some extent of the NHLPA. When we come back, we're going to head out to Halifax, Nova Scotia, and speak with Willie Palov of the Halifax Chronicle-Herald about the QMJHL and the upcoming World Junior Hockey Championships. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by our good friends, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Want to give a big shout-out to the Winnipeg comedy audience. Last night, Rumors did their very first Zoom comedy show where tickets had to be purchased online at RumorsComedyClub.com. Winnipeg's comedy community showed up. They sold out the Zoom show. It was a roaring success, so much so that I'm reliably informed Rumors is going to do it again, because frankly, when do you need to laugh more than right now in the face of a global pandemic? So stay tuned to Rumors, their website, and all their social media for upcoming information on the next Zoom show, and God willing, hopefully sooner rather than later, we can get back indoors and see live stand-up comedy again at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program from the Halifax Chronicle-Herald, Willie Palov. Willie, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're doing well. We're doing well. We're healthy. COVID's a bit of a tire fire around these parts, so we're a little bit jealous of the Atlantic bubble that has proven to be quite successful. And, well, the fact that somehow, some way, you know, in Atlantic Canada, you guys are playing hockey on a regular basis. That is quite impressive.
Yeah, so far it's been pretty good. There have been a couple of bumps. Just this week, there was a staff member with the St. John Sea Dogs get tested, and he was positive. So they had to shut down, and they had to shut down the team they played against that weekend, Cape Breton Eagles. But hopefully that's temporary. You know, they're quarantining and doing the rigorous testing, and may only last a week. But, other than that, for example, the Mooseheads here in Halifax have played uninterrupted, same in Charlottetown and Bathurst. And for the most part, this division has been really, really lucky.
Well, yeah, to that point, I mean, it's a bizarre year, of course, in the QMJHL, as it is bizarre everywhere in the world. The Mooseheads have played 16 games, so really COVID uninterrupted. Meanwhile, a lot of the teams that are based in Quebec just can't play anymore. You know, you have a team like the Quebec Ramparts who play out of Quebec City, if I'm not mistaken. They've only played 4 games. So, you know, how bizarre is it that the Mooseheads have played a relatively regular schedule, the Quebec teams haven't, and what does that mean going forward, you know, when it comes to, you know, if we get to that point, you know, playoffs and playoff positioning and the postseason, you know, when you have this great disparity between games played?
Well, it's like almost everything with this whole pandemic. I mean, they're just figuring it out as they go. The plan back when they made it in August or September was, we're going to divide into 3 divisions. It's all going to be based on geography, and teams are only going to play each other within that division. So to limit exposure and also financially limit travel expenses, overnights and hotels, that kind of thing. So it started out well enough, and then they did have a bunch of positives in sort of that central region of Quebec, you know, around Montreal and Quebec City. Not surprisingly, the densest population. So they took a little hiatus there while teams sort of out in the hinterlands up, Rouyn, Noranda, Val-d'Or on the western part of the province, and then eastern part, you've got Rimouski and Baie-Comeau. They kept going, so they haven't shut down at all. And where we are now is kind of a hybrid of new ideas. They've created a bubble in Quebec City that launched a few days ago. So 7 of the teams in that sort of central part of Quebec are all inside that, and they're playing 2 to 3 games a day. That's going to last, I think, 11 days, and they're just going to kind of rocket through some of their schedule. And meanwhile, those other teams I mentioned out in the more rural areas are playing each other, but also they're going to travel back and forth to go interdivisional. So they're getting creative in the Quebec divisions, and then down here, like I mentioned earlier, we've got a little shutdown with 2 of the teams now that hopefully will be over in a week or so. And then earlier we had about a week shutdown with the team in Moncton, who are actually still, they're in an orange zone right now too. So, if we can keep the numbers down just in the general population here, they're climbing a little bit in Nova Scotia and New Brunswick right now, but, they're clamping down a little bit in the last 48 hours. So if they can stabilize that, then the Maritimes teams will be okay, and then they'll plow through those games in Quebec, and then I guess we'll just see what it looks like in April when playoffs are supposed to start, or March, I guess it is.
Now, Willie, I know the Mooseheads have been struggling a little bit as of late. They've lost their last 4 games, but they play Charlottetown, who's obviously red-hot, first place in the QMJHL right now, so hopefully Halifax will be able to get back in the win column there. And, you know, I wanted to ask you about a few players. Justin Barron is a guy that I think, surprised a lot of people with his trajectory last year. Became a first-round pick of the Colorado Avalanche. I think he was 25th overall. He, of course, is in Red Deer right now, trying out for Team Canada's World Junior team. So just a little bit, maybe if you could just talk to our listeners about his development last year with the Mooseheads. And then also, there's a couple of players, this year that are projected to be pretty high draft picks for the Mooseheads. Zachary Leroux, who's projected to be possibly a first-round pick out of Quebec. He was rated, I think he was rated as an A prospect by NHL Central Scouting. And then, of course, we have to talk about the other Bobby Orr as well, who's a point-per-game player right now for Halifax.
Yeah, so with Justin, you look at his, I guess he'd be in his fourth year in the league now. His first two and a half, he played kind of behind Jared McIsaac, who would be familiar to people who tracked the World Juniors. He was with Team Canada for 2 years, a really, really strong major junior player. He's since left the team through graduation, and well, actually was traded last year to Moncton. And along with that, they were a contending team for his first 2 years in the league. So as a 16- and 17-year-old, he's surrounded by tons of other good veterans. And watching him in isolation with his ability, it didn't take long even then to recognize he could skate like a pro, and he had all kinds of other attributes like his skill level and his size and everything else. But suppose he stayed under the radar for others because – he wasn't playing 30-35 minutes a night like a lot of number one guys do, but that's what he's been doing this year. Of course, he was drafted, as you mentioned, in October, and he's a 19-year-old now, so he's not going to be in junior beyond this year, I wouldn't think. So for me, despite maybe not the name recognition across Canada, I like his chances to make the World Junior team. He's got a long history with Hockey Canada, so they're familiar with him. So the other two guys, Zachary Leroux, came to the Mooseheads to complete the trade that sent Jared McIsaac to Moncton, along with Bo Grew, another good player. So yeah, he was, I think, a 20 goal scorer as a rookie last year on a really stacked team in Moncton. I forget if he was second or third overall in the midget draft as a 16-year-old. So a ton of pedigree comes with him, and I really love the way he plays. He's highly competitive. He really kind of lights up when he can create a track to the net. Great finisher, and he's got lots of energy and spirit. You know, he's got a real spark about him. So yeah, I don't want to say safely put him in the first round. No one is ever safely unless you're, I don't know, Connor McDavid or someone like that, but sure, he could go as high as the top 15, I think. So Bobby Orr, he's listed as Robert Orr, but I asked him, he prefers Bobby, so I'm good with that for obvious reasons. a bit of a surprise player. He was drafted 2 years ago into the league, but didn't report. I think he had some college aspirations, but so the Mooseheads traded for him, and he comes to the team as a 17-year-old. And like a lot of teams, because the Mooseheads are missing their two European players, and up until this week they're missing an American player, their lines were fairly wide open. So he got to play a lot early. He landed a few weeks ago on the top line with Leroux, and Elliot Desnoyers is a Philadelphia pick, and He's kept pace. Like he could get his way into the conversation for being drafted too. So another good player coming out of Halifax.
You know, Willie, is there a play? You know, over in the pro leagues in Europe, we're seeing fans in the building. Are there any fans right now watching these games in the QMJHL? And is there, if they're not, is there a plan to have them? And how are the owners handling obviously the lack of fan and the impact economically that has on the teams?
There are, if you can believe it, fans in the building here in the Maritimes. So they've been extremely cautious. It's been in line with the other protocols, just for, you know, our general society, like limits on spacing and full-time mask wearing and all that. So I'll use the building the Mooseheads play out of as an example. So normally the capacity there is about 10,500, but they've closed off the upper bowl. And people are assigned a section, and within that section, you can have your own personal bubble of up to six people. So if you buy a sort of a block of tickets, but you have to wear your mask full time. and each section is assigned, well, more than one, but they're assigned a specific bathroom and entrance. Concessions are kind of shut down to delivery to the seats, and the capacity now that they're going to is just under 2,000, like 1,900 and change. So the building's less than 20% full, but compared to what they have in Quebec, which is no fans, it's you know, it's again, we're really lucky down here. So the way it's worked out is they're kind of relying on, I don't know how it's working out, but they're hoping for a little more revenue out of the webcast streaming for those fans who normally would go to the game. They're cutting expenses, like I mentioned before, travel. There's very few overnight trips now. Obviously, they're not driving from the Maritimes out to other parts of Quebec. So the Maritime teams are really just trying to stay afloat more than anything. And now in Quebec, here's what's really interesting, is because the government hasn't allowed them to have any fans, that they came together with a kind of a bailout system. So I think each team's been given $1 million, but in order to get that money, they had to sign off on new rules across the league to cut back on fighting. The Quebec government tied the two things together. So what you get now is every fight also gives you a 10-minute misconduct, and they have a limit of 3 fights, and then you get a suspension for 1 game, and every fight after that, you get a game suspension. So kind of a quirky little setup there, but at least the games I've seen, fights are way down, and you don't really notice it a lot. So I don't know. It's strange times, and that's a little wrinkle that's been thrown at us too.
Well, the wrinkles have been thrown out the entire society for 2020, so why not another one in the hockey world? Willie Palov covers the Halifax Mooseheads and the QMJHL and junior hockey in general for the Halifax Chronicle Herald. Willie, appreciate your time, appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, my pleasure. Nice talking to you. Thanks.
Likewise, Willie. Take care. Before we go to break, a quick look at the Bodog.net scoreboard. And this isn't a scoreboard update per se about a game going on, but if you consider free agency a game, this certainly applies for basketball fans. Fred Van Vliet, a key member of the Toronto Raptors, a key member of the Toronto Raptors championship team, has agreed to a 4-year contract with the Raptors, staying in Toronto 4 years, $85 million for Fred Van Vliet to re-sign with the Toronto Raptors. Brought to you by Bodog.net. Head to Bodog for sports odds, poker strategy, and free-to-play casino games. Bodog.net. Make a play. We'll be back after this on the Illegal Screen Basketball Show.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, one final segment. Hope you've enjoyed the last 2.5+ hours of content. And, of course, we'll be back next Saturday in case you missed any of it. And, of course, it's also available on podcast form in case you haven't been able to sit around in front of your radio like an old-timey 1950s-style radio show. Really, where have you been going, though? Because you're not supposed to go anywhere. Stay home. Tune in. Turn on.
I'm just happy that you're not going to put an old-timey bathing suit on.
Nobody.
like a Borat style one?
No, I don't even know where he's going with that. Is it even worth even exploring that?
You've seen That's My Boy. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's your guys' movie. You guys, when you used to have date nights before as you had.
Before women were in the picture.
Yeah, exactly. Before you know, familial
well,
obligations.
Dave's yeah. always had women, but there are a few lean years for me.
Yeah, well,
which is funny because I'm not lean.
I was going to say that it was sitting there, and I just decided to pass it up.
But it was there.
I would take the high road.
Drew, I said it. You all you had to do was spike it. It was a tap in.
It was a tap in, but I decided no. I'm going to take the high road. I'm going to be a gentleman about it.
You just used a volleyball followed by a hockey analogy.
Well, you know, we're the illegal screen basketball show.
Legal bump.
The illegal procedure football show.
Drew was a libero at one point. So,
what does that mean?
What is a libero in volleyball is like someone who I actually have no idea.
No way that you made that up.
No, a libero. Look at Google.
I hate
volleyball. It's like a position.
Really,
I think,
love volleyball.
No, it's
I hate volleyball.
Really? hold on. First of all, I've never heard of this love for volleyball that you have.
If volleyball is on, I'm watching volleyball. I think it's a great sport.
Growing up, my dad was a prof. I used to always go to the Westman game.
Well, no big deal, but I was on the Joseph Winski Collegiate Grade 7 volleyball team.
Hashtag that is no big
deal. Hold
on, Drew,
was it beach volleyball?
It wasn't, but I was the only one who could serve the ball over the net, which should really speak to the athletic prowess that was on display.
Anyways, a libero is an important position. I obviously don't know anything about volleyball, but it's
if any of our listeners know anything about volleyball, chime in, please.
A position that in the middle, and you cover a lot of the court. Like, you do some settings.
Then you're definitely libero.
The show is ending early. That's Sean back at the station just ending the show at that point in time. Well, we were going to talk about the realignment divisions. We'll save that for next week because we had a volleyball segment for some reason instead. That's it for the Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Big thank you to our guests. Willie Palov of the Halifax Chronicle Herald. We were joined by Joe Haggerty of Boston Hockey Now. We were joined by Charlie Remouliotis of NBC Sports Chicago. And, of course, Jeff Kerbison, author of Broken Ribs and Popcorn. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca. It's on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's wherever you get your best podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us, let us know what you think of the show. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For Dave, for Ezra, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Big thanks to Sean Asor back at the studio. Thanks for listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.